This should be quite a short podcast this week. It's Anzac Day. We're running a little bit late, but we've got to produce one every week, and this is it.
Mm.
So there's a couple of interesting stories come up, Sue. There's a flat in...
Dudley. Well, I
didn't realise it was in Dudley. Well, yes. Let's talk about this. We'll talk about it later. There's a flat in Britain that's for sale with a prison cell in the corner.
Mm.
And there's another story about how we are being digitally manipulated.
Or digitally duped. That's hard to say, isn't it?
It is. So is digitally manipulated, I can tell you, in property advertising pictures. And I want to talk about Lawyer in the Hot Seat, which I recorded this week with David Bannerman, where I had 8 pages of questions to get through, and we barely got through 2.
Mm. In how long?
An hour.
Okay.
So, and that will be coming up as your podcast next week. So we'll have a quick chat about that. I'm Jimmy Thompson. I write the Flat Chat column for the Australian Financial Review.
And I'm Sue Williams. I write about property for the Sydney Morning Herald, the AFR, the Melbourne Age and Domain.
And this is a Flat Chat Wrap. So you came across a really funny story. It's in Domain, which is your domain, about a flat in Britain,
yes,
which has a prison cell in the corner of the room. Now, this is a special significance for you, Sue Williams.
It is, yes. It's in Dudley, which is in the West Midlands, just near Birmingham.
Yep.
And I got my first job in Dudley as a journalist because that's the home of the biggest independent newspaper in Britain, and I got a job with them.
Well, not Dudley, the West Midlands.
Well, the West Midlands, yeah. They had lots of different editions, 22 editions throughout the West Midlands.
What was the name of the paper?
The Express and Star.
Right.
So the head office was in Wolverhampton, which I felt was a horrible place. So cold all the time. And one of the first offices I went to, they sent me to Dudley, which was a problem because although I was a really excitable young journalist, Dudley has one of the strongest accents in the whole of Britain because it's the furthest point from the sea.
Right.
And they say it's very close to Chaucerian English.
Wow.
And the accent is so hard to understand.
Well, that comedian, Lenny Henry.
Lenny Henry's from there, yes, yeah. Absolutely. Dudley.
Yeah.
And I was trying to interview people and I had no idea what they were actually saying to me. And bizarrely, they had no idea what I was asking them either because they just couldn't understand what they said was my London accent.
Right.
So now, they called me London Girl all the time.
Is there any reason why an apartment in Dudley should have a prison cell in the corner?
Well, this was a refurbishment of an existing building, and it was the local police station, which I remember very well, because
right,
we used to go there all the time for our news.
Yeah.
And they've built a fabulous new HQ somewhere else,
yeah,
and it's no longer needed. So this old stone building, they've turned into apartments.
Yeah.
And on the ground floor is a kind of interesting feature, the studio apartment, which is quite large. They've left a jail cell in the corner. Just as a feature.
So it's like one of these ones you see in cowboy films. You know, it's all bars and things where they can...
That's right. Yeah. It's just like a barred box, really.
Yeah.
And it looks very, very weird.
I can think of people who would be desperate to have something like that, especially people with small children.
Oh, that's a good idea, really.
Yeah.
Well, in the advert, they've kind of said it could be a bedroom because it's just a studio apartment.
Yeah.
Which would be kind of weird.
Well, you'd cover the,
like that,
you'd
really
cover the,
yeah, with
the bars,
curtains
maybe,
or something. Yeah. Or they've said it could be, you know, an adjunct to the kitchen, like a dining room, a feature dining room. Which,
yeah,
would be quite, that would be quite interesting, really.
Yeah.
And obviously, you kind of think, you know, a brothel keeper might take it, and I don't know.
For whatever that goes up
nefarious
to
nefarious reasons, yes.
Premises.
And it, I mean, it's $360 Australian dollars a week, which seems cheap.
Oh, it's for rent.
Yeah, yes, because it's still with the real estate agent, so they're renting
right
it out. So $360 Australian dollars a week, which is kind of quite cheap, really, for a studio.
Yeah.
But that's
but
on Sydney prices,
yeah,
but it is in Dudley, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the most godforsaken places on earth.
Oh, you're going to cop it now.
It was just so cold and so miserable, and I couldn't understand anyone. They couldn't understand me. And they kept, there was this character called the Dudley Butcher.
Yeah.
The Black Country Butcher, because
right,
Dudley was in the Black Country.
Right.
And so called because apparently Queen Victoria rode through in her carriage one day, and it was all the coal dust and smoke and terrible air, and she closed the curtains, snapped them shut, because she didn't want to look at such an ugly place.
Because it was the heart of the Industrial Revolution, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. No, that's right. So it wasn't the most wonderful of areas, really.
Right.
And they kept sending me to the black country butcher, who had the most incredible accent. It was just impossible. And they thought, everybody in the office thought it was really funny to send the junior out there, and it was just horrible.
So he wasn't a serial killer?
No, he wasn't. He was actually a butcher. And as a vegetarian, I didn't like it anyway. And but he was the man who knew everything about Dudley. His family had been there for hundreds of years.
Right.
And he was kind of Mr. Dudley, really.
Right.
So he was the source for lots of stories, but if you could understand him, of course. But a lot of the reporters who worked in the Dudley office were actually from Dudley. So they had no problem whatsoever. But for them, it was a continual source of amusement to send me there.
All right. There you go.
It was horrible.
Well, we'll throw up a link to the flat with the jail cell.
Just in case anybody fancies a holiday,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, they should put on Airbnb.
Maybe so.
And the other real estate story, while we're on the topic, is, again, from your domain, are we being duped by artificially enhanced real estate pictures?
And it seems we are. I mean, there's quite strict rules around enhancing real estate pictures. You know, they can make a property look as good as it possibly can, but they can't really change many of the features.
Right.
And this was a piece by Alice Stolz, the editor of Domain. It was really interesting. It was shown on Channel 9.
Yeah.
And she showed a number of examples, one where there was a house in the middle of that was still being built, really, and just outside it was just mud and earth, and there was a tractor out there doing something. But on the ad, they'd actually put in turf.
Right.
So it was all just turfed over. Even the driveway to the house, which was a bit of a mistake, really.
Right, yeah.
But it looked really nice because you had all this green turf, and then you had the nice newly built house. But then they had a picture from inside the house, but they'd forgotten to change the view out of the window. So out of the window, you could see all this mud and
all right,
earth
and
building
works. There,
yeah, that's right. And so they hadn't even done it properly.
That's sloppy yes. cheating.
Yes.
There's the worst kind of cheating. If you're going to cheat, do it right. But we've been dabbling in the real estate market recently with an investment, and I do recall looking at pictures from the inside of some of the apartments in the complex where we have our investment and thinking there's no way they could get that view.
That's right. Quite close to the ocean.
Close. It feels like you're sort of on the edge of a cliff looking straight down into the ocean. And in fact, the sea is about 300-400 meters away, if not more.
Mm.
And you think, yeah, look, maybe, could it be that that is a view from the balcony and then they've just increase the size of it to fill the frame.
Yep. No,
and
probably
it's so easy to do. This is why I'm annoyed about the sloppy cheating.
Yes.
I mean, it is really easy to do these things. But I wonder if that's false advertising. If you're making it look like a building is much closer to the ocean or the beach or the trees or the hills or whatever than it actually is, or if you're showing a view of, hills that are way in the distance but look closer and you're cutting out the road that runs past the apartment or the house, that's very dodgy, isn't it?
Yeah, and all those pictures should be really labelled as that.
Digitally altered.
Yes, and this view is enlarged for cosmetic reasons or something like that. And one of the examples Alice used in her track, which was really funny, there was a nice little house, but over it was this massive, massive water tower.
Right.
Like just behind it, kind of, completely overwhelming the house. And yet one of the pictures of the house, you couldn't see this water tower at all. And Alice suggested that maybe somebody was lying down and taking the picture from the ground in order to cut out the picture of the water tower, because the water tower just wasn't there. It was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I remember that controversy a couple of years ago about the crowded beaches, and there was pictures in the paper, and the beach, I think it was Bondi, looked absolutely mobbed. But somebody went along and said, yeah, because of the angle of the photograph, which has been really flat and basically into the heads of the people on the beach. But if you actually raised it up and looked down at an angle, you could see the beach was like empty.
I mean, there's lots of ways that, you know, media can be manipulated in that way. I've just got this new book out, called Run for Your Life. And this guy used to live in Russia. And the first anniversary of Princess Di's death, all the Russian newspapers reported that nobody had taken any notice. They'd completely forgotten her and it was all over. Whereas, in fact, the streets of London were crowded with mourners going to pay their respects. But the Russian newspapers had taken pictures of the streets at something like 4 a.m.
Right.
When they were completely empty. And they, you know, they'd just published them like that. So I guess the
fake news has been around for a while.
A long, long time.
Yeah.
But we're getting better at it, really, you know, with AI and fabulous digital tools to manipulate pictures.
Well, I remember a couple of years ago you did a book, Women of the Outback, and you took pictures of First Nations woman and her sister outside the community centre that they ran, and then the sister died in the interim, and I spent hours and hours and hours removing her from the picture because it would have been offensive to have shown that.
Yeah.
And I'm carefully, you know, moving wooden planks from one side of the picture to the other. And you think these days it would just be so easy. You've got cameras that will do that for you.
Yeah.
You just run your finger around the outline of the thing you don't want or the person you don't want, and it takes it out and fills up the background. When we come back, we're going to talk about what David Bannerman and I spoke about in Lawyer in the Hot Seat and what will be in next week's podcast. That's after this. Eight pages of questions they sent me from Bannerman's lawyers, who are one of our sponsors, that I had to ask David Bannerman, the lawyer. And we did basically got two. We got through two. In an hour, as we said before.
Why? Were the questions really complex? Was it really difficult? Or
all strata questions are complex,
And they always lead on to other things.
And they do. And the other thing I hadn't realized, and this actually feeds into something, a debate that's been going on between me and a reader on our forum, where I've been saying, and this is related to strata roles and whether or not strata roles should have owners' email addresses on them. And I've been saying the law says this, and the law says you've got to maintain the strata role. If the owners have given their email addresses for the purpose of delivery of information, that has to be in the strata role. And if they haven't given that email address, then they should provide another one. And this reader, you know, who's quite a loyal flat chatter, has been saying, yeah, that's all very well what the law says, but what it actually means, it could be something else. And I've been saying, well, I don't care. Until somebody says in a tribunal or a court case, no, you don't have to put the email addresses on, and no, you don't have to provide the strata role, that's what I'm going to go by. It was interesting talking to David about this because I was both wrong and right at the same time.
How can you be both wrong and right? That's...
Well, I was wrong in saying that whatever it says in the Strata Schemes Management Act is the law as would be applied, because he was saying that all through the Act, there are certain things that are prescriptive, legislative, if you want, which usually come with a penalty attached. So you can tell they're serious. You've got to do this. You've got to not do that. There are other things that are regulatory, which don't have penalties attached, but could have penalties attached if the tribunal decided that way. And there are other things that are kind of, I wouldn't say suggestions, but they're instructive rather than prescriptive.
Is other law like this? Law in other...
Apparently, yes.
Oh, okay.
But strata law is full of this stuff because they keep fiddling with it. He was saying, you know, back in the day, they'd bring out the law, it would go through several readings in Parliament, then they would publish it, and that was it. It was a chunk of paper that sat in a legal library somewhere. And if they wanted to change it, they'd have to go through the whole rigmarole of getting the changes approved and then getting them put into the law and getting the law reprinted. Now, they basically say to the minister, you know, we want to change this. He goes, yeah, that'll be fine. We'll get it. We'll just put it through as an amendment. And they just sit, somebody sits and types it in on a computer. And there it is. And suddenly it's law.
Yeah. So they're just kind of tinkering with it all the time.
Yeah. And it's changing all the time. And I recall having been involved in one of these arguments about the law says this and the law doesn't say that, and going, I'm just going to prove myself correct. And I go back and I look for the section of the law and go, it's not here anymore. It's gone. What's happened? Or it says something different. So he was saying that, you know, there are two levels. There's the stuff that you've got to abide by or you could get fined. And there's stuff that's kind of like, he said, one of the examples is the notice period for strata meetings.
Mm.
Now that is laid out in the law. What happens if you have a meeting that doesn't abide by those timings, like giving notice, due notice, or the agenda turns up and it's been changed slightly? Does that mean the whole meeting is invalid?
Mm.
And he said, no. You can go to a tribunal and the tribunal will say, yeah, look, he hasn't ticked all the boxes, but the intention is there.
Wow, that sounds a bit like a catch-all, doesn't it?
Yeah, really? Yeah. It's a real get-out-of-jail-free for a lot of things. So it seems like I, when me quoting the law on what should be in the strata role and saying it's there in black and white, therefore it has to be abided by, I was kind of wrong.
Mm.
But then when I brought up that specific issue with David, he said, no, you've got to have it on the strata role. You've got to have the email addresses on the strata role. You've got to make the strata role available to all owners. And if they don't have the actual email address that the owner uses for communication, you can ask to see all the communications with a couple of exceptions, which is stuff that's legally privileged.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're in dispute with your strata scheme and they have communications between the strata scheme and the lawyers, you can't really insist on seeing that because that's covered by different laws of privilege. But basically, you can go in and say, I want to see the strata roll. I want the strata roll to have all the email addresses. And if they don't provide the email addresses, you say, I want to see all communications because the email addresses will be on there. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, okay, in this world of some things are the law and some things are kind of suggestions, what would you do if your strata manager refused to pass on that information? He said, you go to a tribunal and you get an order.
Mm.
So
right.
I was wrong about the letter of the law being what applies, but I was right about the strata role and email addresses. One of the interesting things that came up was the Design and Building Practitioners Act. I don't know if you're familiar with this. This is one of David Chandler's introductions.
Right. Yeah.
He was concerned about people getting renovations done in apartment blocks by cowboys, basically, which undermine potentially the whole fabric of the building.
Yeah.
And so they brought in this thing where you've got to get a qualified designer or an architect or somebody to approve your renovations for any work over $5,000.
Wow, that's not much work, is it really?
That's basically everything you would ever do. Like, you know, anything you would do that was significant in a building is going to cost more than that. And people are saying, well, look, I've got a $6,000 job, but I'm having to pay another $15,000 to get an architect to sign off on it, which some people are saying is pushing people into going, oh, look, just do it and don't tell anyone, you know, and that's not a good thing.
Sure. Well, how can you get around that, really?
Raise the threshold.
Oh, okay. So any changes over 10,000
or 20,000, we kind
20,000.
Of,
And that makes sense, doesn't it, really?
But, you know, you still have to ensure that the people who are getting the work done are qualified, know what they're doing, and that you will take responsibility for anything that goes wrong thereafter.
Sure.
But $20,000 is a much more reasonable level. And I think David was saying that fair trading are sort of edging towards that.
Okay. So there's an organisation of strata lawyers, isn't there?
The Australian College
of
Strata Lawyers.
Are they putting pressure on fair trading to try and change that or make?
I would imagine so, yeah. They seem to be becoming quite active.
Mm.
They've certainly been very vocal on the whole SCA, Strata Community Association. and their recent problems.
Yeah, because I'm just doing a story about whether you should renovate or remain.
All right.
And it is difficult because renovating apartments now, you know, you've got the expense of construction costs, which are blown out. You've got the shortage of tradies, which means that qualified builders and good qualified builders can charge you kind of whatever they want, really, because there's so much demand for their services.
Yeah.
And then you've got all the extra costs of certifying the work.
Yeah.
So it does seem to be a major disincentive to renovating anything, really.
Yeah. You know, probably easier to let somebody else come in and sell the place and let somebody else come in and do it. And which is a thing we've discussed in the past, that would you renovate before you sold? And the answer is often no, because people are going to have their own ideas.
That's right. Well, what they're all doing now is just like a really little cosmetic renovation before they sell. And that just means like a new paint job or new handles on doors and things.
Right.
But nothing major whatsoever, because it's just too expensive. It's just too difficult. Yeah. And so leave it to the next person.
Yeah, don't move the bathroom into the jail cell. That would be the... another thing we discussed briefly was the power of a non-viable bylaw. Like, people get bylaws drawn up which fail the test of being, you know, unfair, discriminatory.
The pub test.
Yeah. Mm. Well, no, the actual test in the law, in the act. Unfair and discriminatory and harsh, I think, are the three things.
Mm.
And we were just talking and saying, I asked him, you know, is there any value in just passing a bylaw that might not survive a test at the tribunal, but actually sends out a signal to people? Like, you could have a bylaw about, you know, not parking cars in this area or not having kids playing ball games in the swimming pool, you could say. Now, you pass that dubious bylaw, what might happen is that an owner might come along and say, that's unfair, I'm going to challenge it, which they have to go through all the hassle of doing that. More likely, they'll just go, oh, all right, we won't have ball games in the swimming pool anymore. And even though it's not, strictly speaking, legally enforceable, it still has the effect as if it was.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a particularly good example. But, you know, there are things that you do, you want to send out a signal. Like, you could create a bylaw that says no barbecues above a certain size on your balcony. Somebody could challenge that, but they probably look at it and go, oh, right, well, I'll just get a smaller barbecue because that makes more sense.
Or because I'm kind of in a higher floor, nobody can actually see my barbecue. So it doesn't apply to me.
Yeah, exactly. And finally, we've got a big piece on the website about what Strata Community Australia is doing, their internal investigation and independent investigation and all that, following the NetStrata scandal. And it's been really funny because I wrote to their PR and said, are you guys doing anything? And he said, and he wrote back and said, well, as you know, we're doing this and this and this, but we're also doing this. And this is all listed in the article on the website. I suddenly realized they haven't been sending me anything ever since I fell out with their previous president. SCA seems, I won't say blacklisted me, that's probably putting it a bit strongly.
They've expunged you.
They have dropped me off their mailing list.
So are you going to get back on it?
Oh, I think so. I think so. They were very keen to talk to me when I communicated with them. And tomorrow I will be writing them and saying, am I off your list? Or maybe I've blacklisted them. I was getting so many aggressive emails from their former president that I told him, I'm blocking you. I don't want it. I don't want your name to appear in my inbox, which is probably a bit childish, but, you know, seriously, you know what it's like. You open up your emails and it's like, oh God,
with
another one from this person.
Yes.
And maybe I've been blocking them. Anyway.
Yeah, because I know that sense of dread because we've both been watching this new TV series on Netflix.
Baby Reindeer.
Oh, my God. About a woman stalking a man. And she's
a Scottish woman.
Yes, yes.
A Scottish woman.
Stalking a Scottish man. And he receives so many emails from her every day, just
50,
constantly.
50.
So, yes. So one could imagine this.
I just hasten to add, I have not been stalked by anyone in SCA so far.
No. We're not making that comparison.
But, you know, it's funny. I was looking into this, and I've done a piece for the Fin Review, which I'm hoping will run this weekend, just to get a sense of the turmoil now that there is in strata management. And I responded to somebody, I'm not going to name them, even though I should, on LinkedIn. And this guy responded by saying, you know, he's, first of all, he put sigh. And then he says, basically, you know, clickbait, you know, blah, blah, blah. Because I'd mentioned embedded networks and he hadn't mentioned embedded networks in his thing, I thought, you know, just shoot the messenger. That is not how you're going to get people to have more confidence in strata management. And then I was reading his email and, you know, this thing about NetStrata and how they weren't taking commissions without, you know, it's illegal to take commissions without
reporting them.
Yeah. But they had an insurance arm, which it was taking a skim of some sort. So they were making profits from insurance, but they didn't have to declare them. They weren't doing anything illegal. They were doing stuff that was just kind of dodgy. And this guy who's having a pop at me for clickbait has in his post, this is going on all over the place with some of the biggest companies and it will all come out in the wash. I thought, oh, right, you want clickbait, brother. And on that note.
Yes, we better go.
We better go. Next week, hopefully, we'll have a slightly edited version of the lawyer in the hot seat session I did with David Bannerman. And I know that's always popular with Flat Chat listeners. So look forward to that next week.
Great.
Thanks again, Sue, for coming in, giving up your part of your day off. I know you're busy working on your next book, but it's always good to sit here and have a chat rather than just me rambling on. And thank you all for listening. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Flat Chat Wrap podcast. You'll find links to the stories and other references on our website, flatchat.com.au. And if you haven't already done so, you can subscribe to this podcast completely free on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. Just search for Flat Chat Wrap with a W, click on subscribe, and you'll get this podcast every week without even trying. Thanks again. Talk to you again next week.